Buenas.
Welcome back to Film Posers for Boricuas ranting, raving, and reviewing cinema. Today, we'll be talking about our second annual Best and Worst of the Year. So for this time, it'll be the best and the worst of 2020. And our moderator will be Juan Mojica. Take it away.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our podcast. We hope you're doing well during these times. So the Film Posers have had an eventful 2020. Our brand really soared to new heights this year, thanks to all of you, our followers, viewers, and listeners. So we'd like to start by thanking you all so much for your continued support. It means so much to us. The Film Posers this year had an amazing year, and we were honored to have our first interview with Zoraida Cordova, an acclaimed author who has written successful books such as Labyrinth Lost and Incendiary, which you should all check out. We had an interview as well with the co-directors and producer of the amazing Netflix documentary Mucho Mucho Amor and The Legend of Walter Mercado with Kareem Tatch, Christina Constantini, and Alex Romero, which is also on our YouTube channel. Speaking of which, we launched our YouTube channel. Our Twitter account hit 1,000 followers in a single year. That's insane. We got invited to our first ever film festival with SCAD, and we are just getting started. We're going to keep giving you all content and have some plans for the new year that we're very excited about, so stay tuned. So with all that being said, you are here, which means you have decided to tune in for our season premiere, and we are back to give you all our 5 best and 5 worst movies released in 2020. Now, a disclaimer. If you're wondering why possibly your favorite film from this year didn't make the cut, we are still starting as a podcast and don't have as much access to as many screeners as other critics do. There are certain films that if we had the opportunity to review them in 2020, we would have loved to have had them make our official lists. Some of those films will be made more accessible to the public in 2021, or they came out towards the end of 2020 and we just couldn't make it. But the films we have selected, a couple of them, we had the opportunity of attending a virtual film festival or obtaining screeners. 2020 gave us a lot of content, including hits and misses, and it became very difficult to narrow down our choices. We would have made more selections, but we didn't want to make the episode too long. But don't worry, at the end of the episode, we're going to let you know where you can find all of our rankings and let us know where you can follow us so you can stay updated with the posers. So let's get this party started. We will be starting with our first category, which is Worst of 2020. Films that were so bad, we couldn't recommend them to our worst enemies. To start us off, here is the queen of film Twitter's hot takes. It's film poser Josie. Take it away.
Thank you, thank you. You can't see me right now, but I am waving like a pageant queen. Hi, hope everyone is doing well, and this will probably be a very long episode, so I'm just gonna get right to it. So I surprisingly did not see that many films that would consider to be the worst, so instead of 5 I have 4. So coming up so close and number 4 is Ammonite by director Francis Lee. So I'm going to give very quickly my own disclaimer. I am one for celebrating films, so these being on my worst is not that I'm gonna trash them or anything. I just think that these movies had so much potential and it was wasted. But yeah, let's have fun with this. So again, coming in number 4 is Ammonite. It is set in the 1840s in England, with following paleontologist Mary Anning and a young woman sent by her husband to convalesce by the sea, develop an intense relationship. So despite the chasm between their social spheres and personalities, Mary and Charlotte discover they can each offer what the other has been searching for, the realization that they are not alone. My gosh. I am Resident Portrait of a Lady on Fire lover, so I swear I wasn't going into this purposefully wanting to hate it. I actually thought, hey, this sounds like Portrait. Maybe I'll love it. Maybe I'll add something else to gush over. And it wasn't even me comparing it, because when I mentioned that I was going to watch it, a lot of people were telling me not to compare it. And I swear it wasn't that. It's just the film is weak in and of itself. It leaves you wanting more. It lacks emotion. There's a lot of gratuitous intimacy, that bothered me very much because it feels much more natural and careful and sensitive and portrait. And here it was very odd. That's the best way I can put it while being respectful. But it had really good visuals and everything. It was just lacking, which is very disappointing. Coming in number three, how could we ever forget the 2020 gave us Are You Lost, Baby Girl?
I swear.
Number three coming in hot is 365 Days. It was on Netflix, and a lot of people had a lot of opinions about this one. So let me give you the run-through. I gave it one star. The film follows Massimo Torricelli, a young and handsome boss of a Sicilian mafia family. He has no other option but to take over after his father has been assassinated. Laura is the sales director in a luxurious hotel in Warsaw. She has a successful career, but her private life lacks passion. She is taking one last shot to save her relationship. Together with her boneheaded boyfriend, Martin, and some other friends, she takes a trip to Sicily. She does not expect that Massimo, the most dangerous man on the island, will get in her way, kidnap her, hold her captive, and give her 365 days to fall in love with him. I think that says enough. So if you haven't seen it, now you know basically what you will be getting into. Gabriella and I watched it for the memes, and the memes make it worth it. But honestly, don't be like us. You don't need to watch this. It's not a must watch. It's easily a skippable film. And I'm pretty sure Gabriella will have more to say about this film, so I'm going to leave it there.
I didn't even know what it was about.
Now you know.
Oh, Juan.
I'm so glad I didn't watch.
Oh, Juan, it's a ride.
Next up, number two, Desperados, another Netflix film. So for Desperados, let's see what we have to say. It is a 2020 release, of course. I gave it half a star. In summary, a panicked young woman and her two best friends fly to Mexico to delete a ranting email she sent to her new boyfriend. On arrival, they run into her former boo, who soon gets caught up in their frantic scheme. So, I don't even really know what to say about this film. The cast was interesting, premise could have been good, but it fails. It fails on so many levels. It's not even that funny. There was a joke that basically it was about pedophilia, which already gave me a red flag, and I kept watching. I don't know why. Then there's a scene with a dolphin, and if you watch this film, you know. And all I have to say is that the main character, Wesley, she's not redeemable in any sense. And it usually, rom-coms, sure, the main protagonist messes up in a certain level. But there's a moment where you do feel bad for them and you believe the evolution of the character. But in this one, I do not believe anything about this character. When the friends forgive her, I'm just wondering why. Also, there's one moment where they go to a hotel that's not a resort, and then they start, they're basically making a joke about how they're not safe. And I'm like, okay, are you making fun of Mexico? What's going on? It just felt very insensitive. It felt like very crude humor, very dated humor, and it will not age well. And that was Desperados. It's on Netflix if you want to watch it. So my number one, and I feel so bad, but my number one worst film of 2020 is Unhinged. So, summary. He can happen to anyone. A divorced mother honks impatiently at a deranged middle-aged stranger at a red light while running late on her way to work. His road rage escalates to horrifyingly psychotic proportions as he becomes single-mindedly determined to teach her a deadly lesson for provoking him. We've talked about this film before, so I will not go into detail. I will just say that I left it unrated. I don't know what that says. It could have been a lot better. Again, these films definitely had potential, and I think they get lost in the gimmick of things, and they don't make something concrete or substantial. So that's all I can say about Unhinged. Those are my worst films of 2020.
All right, thank you for those picks that we know to avoid. Next up, advocate of the Riri Navy, film poser Huang. So when it comes to my picks, I'd like to start by giving myself a pat on the back for reaching my 2020 goal and watching 100 films that were released in 2020. It was a struggle, but we made it. You know, I saw great films, and then I saw films that shouldn't have been greenlit to begin with. So let's get this thing going. We're going to start with number 5, and that is a movie no one has heard about, and I'm sure no one will hear about, called Girl, directed by Chad Faust. And it's about a young woman who returns to her small hometown, intent on killing her abusive father, only to discover someone murdered him the day before. As the girl searches for answers, she uncovers a family legacy more dangerous than she imagined. There are so many things wrong with this film. Okay, let's start off. This copied Bird Box because the main character's name is Girl. Dead ass. Not even kidding. Named Girl. Bella Thorne's character's named Girl.
Oh my god.
Okay, so speaking of Bella Thorne, now I have said time and again that I believe she is a very talented and compelling actress. However, when it comes to this film, not even her performance can save this movie. And see, the problem with this gritty thriller is it has absolutely no idea what the fuck it's trying to say. I'm sorry. It feels predictable, generic, and very much like a bad Lifetime movie. And that's making me feel bad for Lifetime movies because I've seen ones that are better than this. And it feels as if this revenge tale was lacking excitement. Like, how do you make a revenge tale without it being exciting? Like, you're supposed to root for the main character and be like, let's go. Yet, like a similar point that Josie brought up with Desperados, I feel the character here doesn't have a redeeming quality that it's like, let me root for her. Like, no, I know what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen at the end. I know the twist. So why do I really need to root for her if I already know what's going to happen? I'm going to leave this in the dust. If anyone wants to check this out, please don't. But it's available on video on demand. Next up, number 4. Oh, boy. Antebellum. Directed by Gerard Bush and Christopher Renz.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. If it chooses you, nothing can save you. So successful author Veronica finds herself trapped in a horrifying reality and must now uncover the mind-bending mystery before it's too late. This is more like Antebelle. Why did I try to watch this? Holy shit. This is like if someone decided to take 12 Years a Slave and horror elements from Jordan Peele's successful horror films, combine them, and then just mess it up the entire way. It drops the ball so many times, and it was uncomfortable to sit through at times. I kind of see what they were trying to do, but no, it just didn't work. I thought Janelle Monáe and Gabriel Sidibe were the highlights. They did their absolute best to try and save this movie. But, you know, you can only save a bad movie. Like, you can only do your best, and it wasn't good enough. Like, they tried. This was just, the script was bad. I had so many cringeworthy moments. And Jenna Malone is a character here who has nails on a chalkboard of an accent, a southern accent. And, baby, no, I don't know who told you that was a good idea. It wasn't. I'm sorry, but it wasn't. And by the time I got to the end, actually by the time I was like halfway through, I was already checked out. I didn't care what happened, which is a shame because the ending almost had something that was almost good for her. She had one scene that was like, oh, good for her, but it wasn't enough to redeem this whole damn movie. Like, no. And the twist, I saw it coming from a mile away. It's like, I'm not going to spoil it, obviously. I want to, so I can complain about it, but I'm not going to. It's not exactly a horror film. It's more like horror to sit through, like horrible to sit through. And if anything, this movie teaches you, check your Uber before you get in, check the license plates, make sure it's the right car, take your time, don't do what Jenna Monáe does. She just got into a random car. No, protect women. That's what we need to do. Antebellum, I'm pretty sure no one will remember this movie. This was on PVOD, now it's on video on demand for rental as well. You can do a lot better things with your money than see this. I'm sorry. Like, it's not worth your time. That's the honest truth. Which is a shame, because of course, I'm rooting for Janelle Monáe as an actress. I really am. I wanted to get those roles that she deserves, those big-time roles, but this was not it. And that was me being kind. Number 3, The Stand-In, directed by Jamie Babbitt, starring Drew Barrymore in two roles. So when ordered to serve a year in rehab, actress Candy hires her on-set stand-in to take her place. The unassuming woman flips the script and steals her identity, career, and boyfriend in this hilarious comedy about trading places. I still can't believe they considered this a comedy. I couldn't find a joke. I didn't laugh once. And I love Drew Barrymore, and Andrew Reynolds was in this, and I'm loving him more as an actor the more I see him in films. But I feel so bad that they're attached to this waste of time. It has some great actors attached to the project, but the concept could have been interesting. That's what upsets me most. It had an interesting concept. But the comedy feels dated. It feels out of touch. It's not going to age well, for sure. And I think the film is more confused trying to see if it wants to be a comedy or a drama or a decent mixture, but it doesn't make up its mind. It doesn't get anywhere where at the end you're like, wow, that was a great story. Good for those characters. Like, no, it was just bad. It was just really, really bad. I kept waiting for a setup and a punchline, you know, how you're supposed to deliver a joke, but all I got was empty air. By the end, I can't even tell you that the journey was worth it because not enough was done to say you went on a ride. I feel so bad, Drew Barrymore. You're great. You're amazing. I will rewatch Charlie's Angels religiously if that's what it takes for the royalties to come through. So you don't have to do another film like this. I will do it. Just let me know, Drew. I will do it. I have no problem with this. But the stand-in, don't bother. It's unfortunate, and it's another film that went on to video on demand. Number two, Josie already mentioned this film. It's called Desperados, and I'm going to make my review really quick. Number one, I'm offended that Netflix said this would be a 98% match for me. Very deeply offended.
Oh my gosh.
I agree with Josie about the comedy. It's not going to age well. It's not well done. And the pedophilia joke, that's a joke that carried on too long, and just no, it shouldn't have been done to begin with, but it was
because like the problem a main is that joke. It isn't a one-time thing. They carry it out for various time and for various moments. And I do understand the whole concept of the rule of threes, like doing something three times elevates comedy.
Exactly.
Or drama even. But in this case, one time was enough and it shouldn't even have happened in the first place.
I think zero times was enough.
Exactly.
I gave it 1 star because Anna Camp from Pitch Perfect was collecting that check. But just like I said to Drew Barrymore, I'm going to say this to Anna Camp. Do you need me to watch Pitch Perfect 1 through 3 religiously? I will help you collect those royalties. Anna Camp, just let me know. Because I don't need you doing another film like this. I'm sorry. I know the work is great, but it can't be that great. And to summarize Desperados, to help Josie summarize this, this was 90 minutes, terribly wasted. Was it 90? 105 minutes, even worse, wasted. When you can spend 3 to 4 minutes on your local music streaming service and stream Desperados by Rihanna from her iconic album, Anti, and have a much better time. Trust me, I would know. Finally, my number one worst film of 2020. This is a hard choice. There were a lot of competitors, but no one was a bigger dumpster fire than this. From Disney Plus, Artemis Fowl.
I forgot that exists.
I forgot about it too.
I'm trying to erase it from my memory. I think I need to go to therapy.
Continue on.
So this is directed by Kenneth Branagh. And Artemis Fowl is a...
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I shit you not. The man who gave you live-action Cinderella, the first Thor movie, Murder on the Orient Express, has now come back with a vengeance to give you, for some reason, Artemis Fowl. Who, speaking of which, is a 12-year-old genius and descendant of a long line of criminal masterminds. He soon finds himself in an epic, if you can call it that, battle against a race of powerful underground fairies who may be behind his father's disappearance. I can't believe Disney expected us to pay money to see this in theaters originally. Seriously? You wanted us to pay money to see this? No. No, 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 no. This was terrible. Was boring. I hated every minute of it. I can only find one redeeming quality about this film, and that was the nice, you know, scenery of Ireland. As someone who loves Ireland, loves seeing it, that was nicely done. But that was like for a couple of seconds, and even then, wasn't worth it. I could find that on Google. I should have. What's worse, this film was made for a budget of $125 million. Let me repeat that. $125 million went into being made for Artemis Fowl, a film that I can't even say anyone here was happy securing that bag. I don't know who thought this was going to be a series, but I don't even know how you bring the script. It's terrible. It's cringeworthy. I think even kids deserve better entertainment than this. Like, I don't care if it's like, let me put this on for the kids for 90 minutes. You could find something better to put on than this. It's not even that entertaining. Hell, it's not entertaining. You had Colin Farrell show up, Josh Gad, who, ay, ay, Dios, I said, that was a choice. That was a choice. That acting was a choice. Judi Dench, hot off her, you know, role in Cats, has decided to be an Artemis Fowl. Judi, if this is a cry for help, we'll help you. We'll find you another role. But don't do this, please. No. You don't need this for your career. What else can I say? What else that hasn't already been said on Letterboxd? How do you set up a film for a sequel when the first film fails every applicable rule of cinema? Instead of spending $125 billion for Artemis Fowl, you know what you could have done? You could have given us an Atlantis live-action remake directed by Guillermo del Toro. You could have given us a lot of films. You could have spread that around. Hell, with that $125 million, I'm sure that would have helped put Black Widow on Disney Plus for free. Let's be honest. But this film was dumped on Disney Plus for free. And after seeing it, I understand why. I don't know who told them it had a chance in theaters. And with that, I thankfully complete my list of the top 5 worst films of 2020. Trust me, there are more. And I will give a shout out to my blog where it will be at towards the end. But we will move on with the episode. As next up, we have the leader of the Keanu Nation and the Regina King Oscar campaign manager. Give it up for film poster Gabriela.
Thank you. Keanu, if you're listening to this, hi. Also, Academy, give Regina King her Oscar. Thank you very much. If not, you will be hearing from my lawyer.
A nomination, at least.
A nomination, at least. Okay, yeah. We'll settle for a nomination. But if she gets a win, even better. Thank you.
She gets a win, Gabriela won't complain for a year.
I will stop complaining about the Academy.
And there's a lot of things wrong.
That's another conversation. We'll save that for awards season coverage. It will be starting in February, so get ready. Anyways, so 2020. It was a rough year, as many of us know.
Correct.
And cinema and everything was not an exception. So even though we were blessed with some great content, we were also cursed with some content. So I have 5 films. And like Juan said, there are a lot more. But these are the 5 that I feel like I wasted my time and I would like that time back. And I'm just in no particular order because I feel like I hated them all the same. So they're in no particular order. Starting off with All the Bright Places. You know, for it being called All the Bright Places, it wasn't that bright.
T.
I read the book years ago when it came out. And I was not a fan of it. And yet, what was I expecting when I watched the movie? I thought, you know, maybe it will translate better to the film. Maybe it will get its message across better and whatnot. No, it didn't. I had my own issues with the book in terms of what it's about. And, you know, I had hope that maybe the film would handle it a little bit better, the subject matter, but it didn't. And, you know, that's only part of the problem. It felt so awkward. I felt like the two leads did not have a lot of chemistry. And it was just, yeah. I put it on my list because I honestly forgot about this movie. I honestly forgot it existed. until I was checking my letterbox and I saw that film and I just like, oh, that happened. And then I remembered that I hated it. And yeah, honestly, I feel like there are better films and better books that deal with the subject matter in a much better and less controversial way. And yeah, just it's on Netflix. If you're interested and if you like the book, then hey, there's a film adaptation. It's on Netflix. And yeah, check it out if you're interested. But it just, it wasn't for me.
What's ironic?
Next up. What?
I was going to say, what's ironic is I liked the book when I first read it, and I didn't like the movie at all. And yet the book, the movie was very accurate to the book.
Yeah, it was very accurate. I'll give it that. So, next up, we have The Call of the Wild, starring Harrison Ford and the CGI dog. I kept looking at Dan Stevens like, those Downton Abbey royalties ran out, right? This is your fault. This is on you. You shouldn't have left the show. Look at what you're doing to me right now, sitting through this horrible movie. And you're just... I was so mad at Dan Stevens, because if you've seen Downton Abbey, then you know what happened to him, and I'm still not over it. I feel like I still need to go to therapy for it to process. But it was horrible. And it's not even the CGI dog that's bad, because yeah, that's bad, but it's just bad.
Oh, and that makes me sad.
Poor dog. Because
despite the dog, I was enjoying it, though. There is a way to use narration, and I don't think they were using it very well.
Yeah, it was just, it was really boring at times, because at times I was kind of like, yeah, this is fun, but then it got, yeah, it was bad. Anyways, Call of the Wild, it's on HBO Max right now if you want to see a CGI dog and Harrison Ford, or give Dan Stevens royalties so that he goes back to Downton Abbey or gets better acting jobs. I don't know. Dan, get it together, man. Get a better agent.
I will defend him, though. He did make one movie this year that I really liked.
Which one?
It's called The Rental, directed by Dave Franco. It's really good, actually. I'll talk to you about it later, but it's good.
Okay. Okay. Anyways, Dan, get it together. Next up on the list, Love, Wedding, Repeat. If you've seen that movie, can you tell me what was the point of it?
To collect the check from Netflix. That's literally the only point.
Yeah, I just... Sam Claflin needed that check.
The Hunger Games royalties weren't coming in.
Yeah, and Frida Pinto needed the check as well.
I think the moral of the movie is that kids ruin everything.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just really boring. It wasn't funny.
No.
Because it then tried to do something new, but it came out of nowhere. And it made no sense. It's kind of like a twist that happens like at the middle of the movie, and it makes no sense because there's no build up to it. You know, there's no mention of this beforehand, and then it just happens, and you're just sitting there, what even? Did they not decide on a better ending? On an ending, the writer could not, they couldn't come to a compromise, so they just decided to do both things. It could have been good. It had potential. I think that's the worst part of it. It really had potential to be better and really good comedy, but it just wasn't. Anyways, moving on. Next up, we have 365 Days. Or, you know, as Josie says, are you lost, baby girl? Stop.
Stop, I'm cringing.
Yeah, you know, the thing is that this movie is horrible and there are so many, it's so problematic. It makes 50 Shades of Grey seem like a family movie. But honestly, seeing it with Josie, we watched it together, I think it made it bearable because of it. Because watching her reaction made it funnier.
Yeah, I do have very reactive faces.
It was hilarious. I remember at one point, she looked away for a second and something happened that I would have loved to see her face. And she just said, do not go back to it. I do not.
I can't. I do not care for it.
But yeah, it's really bad. I think what makes it bad is just how problematic it is and how it romanticizes, you know, kidnapping and all of that. It's just wrong. It's not wrong. Like, the guy is clearly very toxic, very evil, and it's just a lot. And then the soundtrack, how it was kind of like they had an iPod shuffle, and they had it on shuffle the entire movie, and then there were like scenes that looked like they were filming a music video, and these weird edits and cuts. I can't. Although there was this shot that made me laugh for a long time, and it's just that there's this 180 shot of his ass, and to me that was the funniest thing I have ever seen, because why? First of all, and I just laughed because why? What's the point of a 180 shot of his ass? Like,
showing off his assets.
And to think we're gonna be getting probably 2 more films.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, because they're based on book. They're based on a trilogy, I think it is.
No, you're getting 2 more movies. I will be avoiding this like the plague.
It's bad, honestly. But it's so bad, and yet I still think about them. Like, I remember, like, all right. I don't know. It just comes to mind some days, that movie, of how bad it was. And finally, I mean, I feel like this could be my worst of the year. It could be. It has 0.5 star. I gave it 0.5 star on Letterboxd. The Kissing Booth 2.
Oh,
Jesus. I had the brilliant idea to make this movie 2 hours long. I just... Why? What was the point of it? For me to be more annoyed than I already was?
Yeah.
It's horrible. Like, these characters are the absolute worst. They are so immature. They lack communication skills. They're just plain stupid. Like, I wasted my time with Kissing Booth 2. I felt my life draining away watching this film. Do not recommend at all. I've actually talked about this in our Worst of the Worst episode. I actually went a little more in-depth about The Kissing Booth 2. So if you're interested in hearing me talk for like 15 minutes of how much I hate this movie, you can go there. But, oh my god. And then we're getting a third one.
In 2021.
Yeah, this year, because it's already 2021. Those are my picks for the worst of 2020. And honestly, the one that I do feel that I wasted my time with was Kissing Booth 2. Because the rest were bad, but at least I had a good time watching them because I was watching them with other people.
And with that, we move on to the final poser to discuss their worst of the year. She is the leader of the Bong Hive and the woman who will always defend Paddington and give him rights. Give it up for Anna.
Thank you, Juan. Yay! For that amazing introduction. So, compared to the other, like, film posters, I didn't watch a lot of movies that they were bad, but I picked 3 films that I thought they were just boring, like, really boring. So, the first one was Rebecca. It is the remake of Alfred Hitchcock's 1940s film. I'm sorry, but being a movie that is supposed to be a thriller, it certainly lacks the feeling of it. The movie had a lot of pacing issues. It felt super cluttered, and I generally just lost interest in the third act. I saw it with the other film posters, and I was just there on my phone. By the third act, I wasn't paying attention. There were some times that I was like, what's happening? Because I generally just didn't care anymore. Like, they are.
So. Yeah, there was there wasn't enough blood.
There wasn't. Well,
I think, yeah. No.
Where is
the thriller? I was the one who was most invested.
Where is the thriller aspect of it?
There was no tension.
There was no tension. Plus, it had Armie Hammer in it, and me seeing Armie Hammer in something, I automatically forgot the star. I hate him for some reason.
And there I was having a great time with Lily Collins.
Honestly, the only
Lily James.
Oh my god, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Like, the only redeemable quality that this movie has was the costume design and the production design. Nothing else. Like, yeah. Where is the
Lily James.
Spicy? Where is the salt? Where's the seasoning in this movie? It was nowhere to be found. The second film. So, I generally forgot this movie was released until I checked my list. It is a movie that I saw with Gabriela. It's called...
Oh, I remember.
It's called The Photograph. So, short story, I called Gabriela and I was like, hey, Gabriela, I want to be in La Bala. It's like Valentine's Day, you know? But I...
She said, and I quote, can you take me and my estado depresivo to the movies to watch The Photograph?
Honestly, I'm going to use that the next time I go to a theater. Can you take me in my estado depresivo? I'm stealing that.
Anna said that to me, and I was like, sure.
Ma'am, I wanted a romantic, like, good movie, you know? I wanted to be, like, in the mood for Valentine's Day. But
I wanted to cry.
A little bit tear up. But, excuse me, where was the chemistry? Where was the chemistry between Lakeith and Issa Rae? There was nowhere to be found. How the hell can you fall in love after two dates? I'm sorry. There,
two conversations. They weren't even dates.
Okay. Where was it?
I was going to make a military joke.
Like, and and another thing, I feel bad for trashing this movie, but it's just that, how is it possible that you leave everything you built just to be with a person that you only had two conversations with? I don't get it. There's no correlation.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. And the other one is, like, by the end of the film, they just go to a Kendrick Lamar concert. Like, I love Kendrick Lamar, but, like, at the same time, like, what is this? Okay? Like, God. I'm sorry, Gabriela had to, like, call me out two times saying, like, Sophia, you're on your phone. I'm like, I'm sorry, this is boring.
And I think the part that got to me, because Anna was complaining the entire time, and I was like, maybe it'll pick up. Come on, maybe it'll pick up. Something will happen. But then it has a twist. And the twist, you know what's the twist from the very beginning of the movie? Like, it's not... color me surprised. Like, I have to pretend to be shocked. Do you remember that twist, yeah. Anna? And then there's this character in the film. I'm pretty sure they just, like, told him, okay, pretend not to see. What is going on?
Let's continue. And the other, like, I'm sorry I'm rambling with this film, but there's a lot to unpack. Apparently, there's this one scene that they're in a hurricane. How are they in a hurricane? And I'm like, thinking about Hurricane Maria, you know? But they're just there.
Wait, didn't he drive to her house in the middle of the hurricane?
He drove his house in the middle of the hurricane. They got out of in the middle of the hurricane and they went to a friend's house. I was like, sir, that's happening.
In Puerto Rico, you could never.
Okay, like, I just wanted to be in La Bala.
On any hurricane, wherever you are, you don't drive in a hurricane. And then there was, like, the scene where they were arguing about Drake.
They were arguing about Drake and they went to a, like, Kendrick Lamar concert. I'm sorry. But just to finish my ramble up, because I could keep going, honestly. The only redeemable quality of this film was actually the score. The score, it was great. Like, it had, like, a very, like, mellow, jazzy feel to it. I was like, okay, I like this. But other than that, not en la mala, I was bored. So, next film. Josie already talked about it. It's called Unhinged. I just want to say that the only Unhinged character I want to see are played by Elizabeth Moss, Queen.
That is the best thing ever.
Period. Okay.
Anna is like letting it all out. Come on, Anna, let it out.
Okay. Going back, the only redeemable thing, because I was like, you know what, this movie could have, like, has potential, was the first 5 minutes of the film. Because the first 5 minutes of the film is like, they stayed out, like, the essence, like, what's gonna happen. I was like, okay, I think I'll dig this. Second act. Bro, this is just boring, okay? Like, where is the motive? What? Why are you going around chasing this woman? You're traumatizing her, okay? Like, I'm sorry that you just have a bad day, but why are you blaming her, okay? And now, some choices were made. Like, this woman couldn't even call the police or anything. She just kept running. I was like, ma'am, what is you doing, okay? Like, your odd choices are making things worse, okay? People are dying because of you. Russell Crowe, I was like, sure, you have some anger issues that you really need to, like, figure out. Please go to therapy. And I feel so bad. Glad I
didn't sit through it.
Yeah, because it was a screener. Like, thank you for the screener, first of all, but... I just, no, first of all, thank you, because, well, yeah, we gotta talk, we gotta speak the fact, okay, let's be real, it wasn't a good movie, okay, but I feel that it did good in Puerto Rico, because it was the
only movie that was
the only movie that was in theaters, okay, so that's why it went so well.
And with that, we'd like to talk about our sponsor, Anchor, the easiest way to make a podcast. And we're back. Thank you so much for listening to our sponsor. And now, let's keep it going. Before we get into our next category, Best of the Year, we would like to mention that Promising Young Woman is in all of our top 5 films of the year. And we would like to avoid repeating them each time. So we're letting you know as of right now. And if you haven't heard our recent episode on it, you totally should, because let me tell you, it's a promising time. It was my 3rd favorite film of the year, Gabriela's favorite film of the year, Josie's 5th, and Anna's 4th favorite film of the year. So if you need any more reason to check this film out, there you go. It made all of our lists. And if you're hyped to see this film, as you should be, great news. As of January 15th, Promising Young Woman will be available to rent on premium video on demand at the price point of $19.99. If you can, please support this film as it deserves so much love. It has an amazing performance. We can talk to you about it for hours. We literally could. It is that good. And even if you feel comfortable going to your local theater, as I have seen a couple of people feel safe to go there, give it a shot. That's a film worth, you know, watching on a big screen if you feel comfortable. If you feel comfortable watching it at home, watch it at home. It will be available. Point is, check that film out. So with that, Josie, what are some of your favorite films of the year?
Okay, so this is the peak of cinema, because I watched more films that I loved during 2020 than ones I did not like. I mean, again, for example, I gave 4 worst instead of 5. So let's kick off some of the best films of 2020 that I watched with Wolfwalkers. So if you haven't heard about Wolfwalkers, it is currently on Apple TV Plus. And in summary, it's basically, in a time of superstition and magic, when wolves are seen as demonic in nature and evil to be tamed, a young apprentice hunter comes to Ireland with her father to wipe out the last pack. But when she saves a wild native girl, their friendship leads her to discover the world of the Wolfwalkers and transform her into the very thing her father is tasked to destroy. So, it's definitely a storyline that has been seen before. It's very familiar, but it's also wholesome. It feels original. It is directed by Tom Moore and Ross Stewart. It is from Cartoon Saloon, and a lot of people love it. It might be one of the front runners for the best animated film category. I give it 4.5 stars. I don't know what else to say without spoiling it, but it has beautiful music. Unfortunately, it's not original music, so it will not qualify for that aspect of the film for award season, but it is beautiful nonetheless, and it makes the scene majestic. And that is the perfect word to close this review with in terms of the film being just this whimsical, majestic, magical adventure, perfect for kids and adults alike. So let's get into number four. So, number four is Mucho Mucho Amor, directed by Karim Tach and Cristian Costantini. It is about the world's most famous astrologer, Walter Mercado, as he seeks to resurrect a forgotten legacy. Raised in the sugarcane fields of Puerto Rico, Walter grew up to become a gender nonconforming, caporing psychic whose televised horoscopes reached 120 million viewers a day for decades before he mysteriously disappeared. So, as we've mentioned before, we've reviewed this film. We've done the interview, so I highly, highly, highly implore you to check those out, especially our interview. It was a very fun time with a lot of things that you might not have heard yet from usual outlets. We discuss a lot of fun antics from behind the scenes, shenanigans, and it's just a very good interview, and it was one of the best parts of 2020. So the only thing I will leave you with is that if this film does not get any acknowledgement during award season, I will genuinely be very sad, because it touched so many people. It did so much for the Latinx community, not only as a documentary, but as a film and as a cultural reset, if you will. So it deserves love. It deserves much more love and much more appreciation. And I'm pretty sure that even if it does not get a nomination, it is very cared for and loved by the people that watched it and just looked up to Walter Mercado, or just enjoyed hearing him when he would give horoscopes, because that's basically the personality trait of every Latino.
Honestly, Walter is such a big part of our culture and this documentary. It was my favorite documentary of 2020, hands down. Yeah. It was just so well done. And, you know, I learned so much about Walter that I didn't previously know, because growing up, like, he was always in the background. I didn't really pay that much attention to him. I just knew he was there. I knew he existed. I knew his horoscopes reading, but I just didn't know that much about him. And this documentary just really taught me a lot about him. And it was so well done, so heartwarming. And honestly, yeah, if it's not nominated, yeah, you'll be seeing me in the premises.
I'll be joining her. That's the tea.
We'll be there, ready to fight with masks on.
Absolutely. We will.
Exactly. So, in summary, Mucho Mucho Amor deserves rights and love and an award nomination. Give it to it.
Yes.
So, moving on to number three. I just changed it in the past few minutes. So, number three is going to be Sound of Metal, directed by Darius Marder. In summary, it's about a drummer that begins to lose his hearing and has to come to grips with a future that will be filled with silence. Let me tell you, this movie drums, because it doesn't slap.
Ma'am!
Ma'am!
I got dad jokes. So this movie is very good, especially if it does not get any nominations for sound design or sound mixing or sound editing, we will riot, because what they do with this film is not only, it's just, I'm at a loss for words, and that is a horrible thing as a critic. So let me just say that Anna and I got to watch this film at the Savannah Film Festival. I immediately wanted to watch it because I had heard some buzz on Twitter, but I did not know anything. I just know people were talking about it. So I thought it was a film that we should watch. And Anna especially wanted to watch it because she had heard good things. So we watched it. I just love how they represent American Sign Language and deaf culture and the way that we see the progress of Riz Ahmed as Ruben. It's just so frustrating, but I love how he is a flawed character. So you ride the wave with him, but also Anna and I were texting each other like, I am so mad at him right now because he keeps doing things that you don't want him to do. And in the end, it is so satisfactory, that ending especially. I think it's one of those moments where usually when I'm watching a film, I did find the pacing a bit slow at times, but if the closing image or if the closing moment makes me feel something, I will let it pass. So that was the case with Sound of Metal. It was very enlightening and kind of hopeful the way that it ends, which was the only way it could end. So I commend them not only on a visual level, from a directorial standpoint, but also story-wise. It's a very well-rounded film. And I don't think I could have asked for a better thing to watch during 2020. My second film of 2020 is Autumn the Wild's Emma.
Not surprised.
So, here's my journey with Emma. The first time I watched it, I did not like it. Second time I watched it, I was like, huh. Third time I watched it, I was in love. And ever since, it comes up on HBO on the TV, and I just sit down and I just sigh wistfully. I adore this film so much. It is so rich in texture, visuals, colors, score. I put it on for fun because it makes me feel like I'm living in a pastel world, which is the best thing that you could get during 2020 when everything felt chaotic. So Emma brought me that joy. It is, in summary, it is based on the Jane Austen novel. In 1800s England, a well-meaning but selfish young woman meddles in the love lives of her friends. Anya Taylor-Joy as Emma Woodhouse, and she should be in period pieces more often because this suited her so well. And after watching The Queen's Gambit, I want to watch everything she's been in. Please watch it. It is a little bit slow. I think the first time I did not like it as much because I did not watch it with subtitles, and it was very difficult because, well, films in the U.S. often do not have subtitles, which is something we should fix. And yeah, good acting, good script, good visuals. I hope it gets a costume nomination. Please watch Emma. It is.
I saw it because of Josie. She was raving about it, and I'm like, let me give Emma a chance, and I'm glad I did.
Yeah. Josie was like, Gabriela, why haven't you watched Emma? You're a fellow Jane Austen stan. Why haven't you watched it yet? Finally did, and it messed up my top 10 list for a moment there.
I'm just gonna say I'm the only poser
who hasn't seen it. It's okay, I'm the only poser who hasn't seen Sound of Metal. We're fine.
We are closing this off with the 40-year-old version. So, this was directed by Rada Blank. It is about desperate for a breakthrough as she nears the big 4-0. Struggling New York City playwright Rada finds inspiration by reinventing herself as a rapper. Now, if you love theater, if you love Broadway, if you love black and white movies, if you love good writing, if you just want a good film to watch, I highly recommend the 40-year-old version. It is currently on Netflix. You can watch it there. Easily accessible if you have a Netflix account. There are no excuses. It reached a deeper part of myself and my journey as a writer that I definitely appreciated watching this film, especially when it discusses your journey as an artist and how you can change and shift and mold yourself into different ways like a chameleon, and how not everything has to be perfect, but also how you should believe in your craft and not sell out simply for opportunity, but also how sometimes it's difficult not to do that because sometimes you need to start somewhere. It is a good film if you are an aspiring creative of any sort, if you want to be an artist, a director, a writer, a cinematographer, a below the line crew member, anything you want to do, please watch this film because I hope it inspires you. And that concludes my 5 films for my best list.
All right, so we're going to continue with film poser Huang. I'm going to start off with a film that tried to save 2020 and was an excellent time. That's right, I'm talking about Bill and Ted Face the Music. The minute I found out it was going to be available for purchase, I bought it immediately and texted our group chat like, yo, who wants to see this? I'm literally downloading this right now as I purchase it. And I remember seeing it with Gabriela and Josie, and we were vibing. It was an awesome time. Like, it was so great. I saw the first two films for the first time this year, and the first one is probably going to end up in one of my many favorite films ever. It is so much fun. It's so great. It's campy. I loved seeing how the cast of characters turned out. I thought Keanu and Alex Winter still had that amazing and strong chemistry. It was so great to see them together again. The actresses playing their daughters also do a great job. Overall, it was so wholesome and entertaining, and it raised the stakes for the adventure, and it made it even more enjoyable. And it's such a feel-good film that for like 90 minutes, you can just turn off your brain, have a fun time, and just escape, which is one of my favorite things about cinema. When a film can do that and just distract you from everything, that's great cinema. And that's what I feel Bill and Ted did with this third film. I loved it. I have rewatched it. It is great. So just remember to be excellent and party on, dudes. Number yes. four from Disney Pixar, Onward. Onward has a bit of a special place in my heart because it was the last film I got to see in theaters. Point is, the movie, I loved it. I adored it. I thought it was amazing. It made me cry like crazy to the point where literally a woman next to me in my row was like, are you okay? And I'm like, no, it's this movie. I'm fine, but I'm not fine. It's such a fresh look at magic, and it, especially the magic between loved ones. It deals with the topic of loss so well. I loved it. I really did. It's on Disney Plus. If you have a subscription, watch it. It is so, so good. Takes the fantasy world in a new direction, and it was great to see the world building in this film. It's the original kind of content we used to love from Pixar that they used to bring in the past, and they did it with this film, and the tears were earned. It didn't feel like you have to cry because it's a Pixar film. No, it just got your tears. So, so good. I loved Onward. I really, really did, and I really hope more people see this. Number three, also an animated film, Over the Moon. Love this film. Adore this film. Cried probably more the second time I watched it than the first did. It's an animated musical where a girl builds a rocket ship and blasts off, hoping to meet a mythical moon goddess. And I'm going to be honest with this film. Chang'e didn't have to go that hard on Ultraluminary, but she did that for us, and we should be grateful. It's such a touching story about love and loss and moving on. I thought the movie had such beautiful animation with vibrant colors. The soundtrack was fantastic, in my opinion. I loved it. I know people have mixed reviews, but I'm going to defend this film. It was amazing. I loved it. It's powerful. It's heartwarming. It resonated with me in so many ways that I was not prepared for. It's a must watch. And when I saw this with one of my best friends, Godling, she literally asked me, wait, how have I never heard of this Disney film? And I'm like, no, this is Netflix. This is a Netflix original. And she's like, what? It looks so much like Disney. I'm like, no, it's Netflix. So Netflix is really stepping up their game. I really hope to see this at award season. I think it's so well deserved to be there. Please see this. If you, like Josie says, if you have an active Netflix subscription, there is no excuse. You should watch it. It is worth your time. In second place, this is going to be my hot take for the, one of my hot takes for the episode. In second place, directed by Patty Jenkins, is Wonder Woman 1984. I know there are problems with this movie. People have mentioned it to me so many times, but I simply do not care. I loved it. I loved every moment of it. I watched it on Christmas Day, and I was so excited. I watched it in my room. I turned on the TV. It was so great. I literally felt like I was back at the theaters. This movie, I adored it for so many reasons. I thought it brought exactly what the world needs right now. Hope. I thought Patty Jenkins delivers a blockbuster reminiscent of the era it's set in. I felt it delivered on every level, from the emotions to the performance. It's a must-watch for fans of Wonder Woman or superhero movies. It is on HBO Max until, I think, the 24th of January. So if you have not seen it, get on it, because there's not much time left. After that, it goes to theaters, and then it'll go through PVOD, and then it'll get its traditional Blu-ray release. So watch it. And HBO Max is such a great service. Josie called it. It is so good. I'm loving it. And I'm going to keep it. Wonder Woman, for me, one of the main problems I think fans had is, one, everyone was comparing it to the first film. You shouldn't. They're two completely different and unique films. The first one is more Warner Brothers' version of what the origin story should be, combining it with a commercial aspect, combining it with the Wonder Woman tales. And this one is the film Patty Jenkins wanted to make. This is the story she was really hoping to tell. And Wonder Woman in the comics has two sides of her, which you see perfectly in the first film and in the second film. She's not the same person. You see more of a vulnerable side with Diana in the second film. And honestly, I think it's unfortunate the amount of backlash this film got. I don't think it deserves all of it. Yes, I will acknowledge it has some problems. I will pretend I don't see them because I enjoyed it so much, but I can be honest there. But I still love it. And quite frankly, another reason this probably got so much backlash is people were waiting so much for it. Like, this was originally supposed to come out in November 2019, that everyone kept waiting and waiting. Their expectations got higher and higher. Like, oh, it's going to be worth it. And I think that's a problem. You can't set yourself up that high for an expectation. This film, I just feel you need to go into it with an open mind and enjoy it. And think of it as you're going back to the theater, because that's exactly the magic they wanted to give you. And that end credit scene, when I tell you, I jumped out of my bed and I screamed because I knew what they wanted to do next. That was a delivery I was not ready for. And the scene inside the jet, poetic cinema. It, Wonder Woman 1984, I will defend it. You know, I've been known for my hot takes, and that's one of them. I will defend this movie. I loved it. Loved it. Can't wait to watch it again. I'm probably going to rewatch it before the 24th. And finally, my number one film of 2020. Another film which I'm going to get heat for. I don't care. Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. Okay. We have an episode on this. We defend the hell out of it. It is amazing. I loved it. Another film I saw this year, in 2020, in the theaters. I saw it three times in theaters. A pretty good average for me if I really love a movie. I thought the acting was fantastic across the board. I love the act. It was just amazing. Margot Robbie does an amazing job. The costume design, I will riot if I don't see this at the Oscars, because that costume design was amazing. I thought the soundtrack is probably setting the new standard for what a film soundtrack should be, along with Promising Young Woman, of course. But when it comes to those two soundtracks, they are elevating the bar. And this was a soundtrack with a lot of bops. And I think the whole thing was with female artists, which is amazing. It's a fun time. I highly recommend it. It makes for a great watch. And it's a different kind of DC film, which I enjoyed. Because after a while, I felt the DC brand was getting a little stale. Sorry, but it was. I was late to Shazam, but I'm still going to own that. Like, I felt this gave me new interest in watching DC films. I love this film so much. I know it wasn't exactly a Birds of Prey movie, but you know what? Again, I don't care if a movie has a high rewatchability factor, and I love it, and I will defend it. It's an amazing film for me. It is also on HBO Max, which you already have two films to see, Birds of Prey and Wonder Woman 1984. I wonder how that would do as a double feature. I'm going to find out. Thank you, Kathy Ann, for that. I hope to see a Gotham City Sirens movie one day as a result. But honestly, yeah, should Gotham City Sirens have been first? Yes. Am I going to complain about what we got? No, because it was fun. And the egg sandwich scene. The egg sandwich scene. Come on.
That now. Egg sandwich.
That was amazing. The chase scenes were great. The comedy was great. I haven't seen the series yet, but I think this is the best we've seen Harley Quinn. And it's certainly much better than Suicide Squad. So you know what? A plus for me. This is my film of the year. This is my favorite film. And with that, I conclude my list of favorite films. Next up, Gabriela, what are your picks?
I did watch some really good films in 2020 that ended up messing up my top 10 list for a long time. It was a crisis. But we got through it. We got our 2020 films. So starting off with The Half of It, written and directed by Alice Wu. It is a Netflix original film, and let me tell you, I can't believe people stopped talking about this film. It is about high school student Ellie, who is hired by the quarterback of the school's football team named Paul to help him write letters to Wu Aster Flores, the most popular girl in school. However, Ellie realizes that she is also developing feelings for Aster. So it is a love triangle. Both have feelings for the same girl. And let me tell you, I had never seen a story like this. And, you know, it's so beautifully directed because it's called The Half of It. So, you know, as you're talking about, like, half of something. And the entire movie, it just shows how Ellie and Aster are two halves. And it's also a happy film, which we don't normally get with LGBTQ plus films. They tend to be tragic, which is a problem in itself. But this one is so happy and so beautiful and heartwarming. And it just made me so happy when I watched it. I think it's one of the best Netflix original films that they have released. I think it's an important film, you know, for young LGBTQ people who will see themselves and, you know, who can identify with what Ellie is going through and all of that. And it's just done in a very beautiful and positive way. It's on Netflix. Please check it out. It's such a beautiful film. Next up
is my emotional support film of 2020. And I got recognized. The director liked my tweet where I called it my emotional support film of 2020.
We love to see it thrive.
And that is the only... The Old Guard, directed by Gina Prince Bythewood and written by Greg Luca. I have been screaming about this movie since it came out in July. And I watched it. And I was just like blown away by Charlize Theron and her immortal army of gays. She did that for us. It was amazing. It is based on a graphic novel series. I have not read them, so I can't tell you how similar the film is to the graphic novels, so I really don't know. If you don't know what it is about Andromache or by Andy, and she leads this group of people who are immortals, and they have been living through hundreds of years and thousands of years, you know, saving humanity from all kinds of threats, and in present day they find a new immortal. It's great. It's got great representation, but also I would like to point out that, you know, I am like the biggest Nikki and Joe stan, and I realized the last time I rewatched it that the guy that played Joe is the same guy that played Jafar in the live action Aladdin.
Not the live action Aladdin.
Anyways, the script was interesting. You know, the story in itself was interesting. Again, I did not read the graphic novels, but I felt that they explained everything that we needed to know about the immortals really well. How their powers work, how everything works, how they have been able to hide throughout all of these years. And I really love the chemistry between the cast. I thought they were a great fit. And yeah, I love this film. If you haven't seen it, it's on Netflix. Please watch it. And yes, that is my emotional support film of 2020. It was great. Moving on. The next film is one, it was very anticipated. I didn't think I would get the chance to see it, but I'm very grateful that I did. And that is Another Round by Thomas Vinterberg. You know me. You know I love Danish cinema. I feel that they make great movies, and I have watched a lot of them, but I don't know Danish, so please I don't know Danish, so I'm sorry. Anyway, so this is Thomas Vinterberg's latest film, and Thomas Vinterberg, the last one he did was The Hunt, which was nominated, was the Denmark submission for Best International Film at the Oscars. So it stars It stars Mads Mikkelsen, and it's about four men who decide to prove a theory that says that life is better when you're drunk all the time. This is one of Vinterberg's happiest films. I feel like he went to therapy and got it together. Which is weird to say, considering it's a movie that deals with alcoholism, but it does so in a very different way. You know, you go into this film thinking it's not going to end well. This is going to be a tragedy. But it ends up being very bittersweet. You know, it has its sad moments. But overall, by the time it ends, you're just kind of happy. I was not expecting to feel that way when I watched it. And I do agree that it's one of Mads Mikkelsen's best performances. Like, obviously, Hannibal is top tier. But if we're talking about film performances, this is one of his best. And that ending, though, love that ending. I've been vibing to the song ever since I watched this film. Love it. It is Denmark's submission for the Academy Awards for Best International Feature, which I'm very happy that it is. And yes, if you have not seen it, please do. I believe it's available for rental right now. And it will be released in theaters in February in the United States as well. So it will be coming back to theaters. If you have a chance to watch it, please do so. My next choice, and that is Wander Darkly by Tara Mio. Now, we watched this film at the Skatsavena Film Festival. On a whim, I just read Diego Luna, and I was like, I'm in. I was so pleasantly surprised. This film is like a poem. That's the best way it can be described. It's a poem, and the scenes between each other blend like paint. I wrote a review on this, and I also have it on the Cherry Picks, where you can check it out. I love this film. The unique narration style, the directing, the cinematography, it was just so beautiful and heartbreaking. And I have not stopped thinking about this film. So, since I already talked about it, like, I'll keep it brief. And it is now available to rent on Amazon and iTunes. Wherever you get your movies, you can rent it and watch it there. Please do so. It's so beautiful and heartbreaking. And yes, loved it. And so, my final film is one that none of the posers have seen, so I'm alone in this. Yes, I'm calling you out. And that is Archive by Gavin Rothery. I feel like I'm the only person who will put this film in their top of the year, but it just took me completely by surprise. I watched it for Theo James because he's hot, okay? Like, I'm gonna be honest. And I ended up being so surprised by this film because Theo James has made a lot of bad movies. Like, he needs to get a better agent, but he finally did it. He finally made a good one. This film is about, he plays a guy named Jor Almore who is working on AI prototypes, but in secret he has been working on his ultimate goal: to bring back his wife from the dead. Best way I can describe this film is that it's a combination between Blade Runner and Replicas. I actually talked about this in our What We Watched Recently episode, so you can hear more about my thoughts there. But still, it's a great movie. It's available on Amazon Prime. If you have Amazon Prime, you can watch it there. It's so good. It is actually the directorial debut, and I thought it was so well done. The visual effects were so well done, and yes, I love this film, and please watch it and tell me that I am not alone. But yeah, those are my picks for some of my top films from 2020.
And with this episode, we will conclude with Anna's picks. Anna, what are your picks?
So to start off, Josie already talked about it, but my first pick, again, is Sound of Metal. It's Riz Ahmed's best performance yet, guys. I really like how the film was able to open a conversation about the deaf community in a very unique but empathetic way. So even though the movie, it's about the character losing hearing, the film utilizes a lot of sound mixing in a very unique way that, honestly, is really amazing. Another highlight of the film that the movie was able to incorporate subtitles within the movie, which I thought it was pretty great. But I think if you want to hear me more ramble about the film, be sure to check out our episode where we cover the SCAD Film Festival. Now, the second movie is Minari. Minari was my 2020 expected film, and I loved it. It is a painful yet heartwarming story about the American dream and family relationships. The movie has a beautiful score that goes so well with the aesthetic of the film. The cinematography is amazing, and I really love how the film feels very personal, especially that it's based on true events by the director Lee Isaac Chung. Now, the highlight of the film is actually the relationship between the grandson and the grandma. I really like the chemistry between them, and I really hope that they get at least nominated in future award season. Next film, this is my film bro speaking, but it's The Trials of the Chicago 7. I'm just gonna say, Sorkin once again gave us a very thrilling and emotional script. I love the witty humor, especially coming for Sacha Baron Cohen's character. And another highlight was Frank Langella playing the judge. The movie certainly does resonate with the political and climate of today's present time, which that's why I kind of feel that it got an emotion out of me. But again, if you want to check out, this is me just promoting our YouTube channel. If you want to check out our full review, please go to our YouTube channel where we discuss the film. The other film is The Invisible Man. It had kind of like a special place because it was the last film I saw in theaters.
Me too.
Here in Film Posters, we stand Elizabeth Moss Unhinged. I really love how the film really, not to be a masochist, but I was anxious like throughout the whole film.
Yeah.
And I really love how it got an emotion out of me. The other thing I really love was how they made the cinematography kind of like a character with the blank spaces. Especially that kitchen scene, the tension was high. Yeah, it is one of the top horror movies of 2020. Sadly, 2020 didn't, because of COVID, some horror movies didn't come out, but I really loved it. I don't know about you guys. So if you want to check out my full opinion and review, please be sure to check out our review of the film on the Film Posters podcast. Now, the last film, I saw not many people put it on their top list, but I thought it deserved, you know what, it deserved rights. So it's called Run. It's available on Hulu. I saw this movie with Gabriela, and even though that the film was very predictable, it was actually like very fun to watch.
It was,
yeah. And Kiera Ellen, she made her debut as the daughter of Sarah Paulson's character, and I gotta say, she really did a really good job. And Sarah Paulson being unhinged and crazy, I was like, okay, you know what? We dig that. We dig that.
Another unhinged woman we appreciate.
We stand Sarah Paulson in this house.
We stand Sarah Paulson. We stand. Okay? I gotta say, it was the most satisfying ending I have seen in a while.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what?
Good for her.
Like, good for her. She becomes part of the good for her universe, okay? Like, the movie gave me tension. I was a little bit anxious. I was, like, entertained, you know? When the movie is, I feel that it deserves more attention.
Yes, I agree. That's all for today's episode. We'd like to thank you for listening and to give a shout out to all the kind people sending love our way. If you'd like to keep up with us, make sure to follow us at Film Posers on Twitter, Instagram, our YouTube channel, and currently TikTok. If you'd like to believe it, yes, we are even on TikTok. So the Film Posers are taking over. Where can they find you, posers?
So you can find me on Letterboxd at Leading Mohicans. You can find me at Twitter on at Leader of Mohicas. And I am reviving my blog, where you will find an expanded version of the picks I made today and a couple of others at Reinvention of a Lost Writer on WordPress. I will be promoting that on my Twitter after this episode comes out. So keep an eye out.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram as Anna_Sophia53 and on Letterboxd as Anna_Sophia.
So you can find me on Twitter at Gabby_Burgos27 and on Letterboxd at Gabby Cristina.
And you can find me as at the Josie Marie on Twitter, Instagram. I am Josie Marie on Letterboxd, and you can also find me on Full Circle Cinema and Shuffle Online as a contributor, as well as on Film Talk, a visual podcast on YouTube. So to conclude this episode, again, thank you for listening, and remember, we're all film posers. Bye.
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 Bye.